Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Brendan Batchelor in for Jamie Dodd this week. This is the final Canucks Talk of the season alongside Canucks Insider who covers The Athletic for the Canucks. His name is Thomas Drantz. It is Thomas Drantz Appreciation Day here today, and Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the work site. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio, Kintec Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? And on this Thomas Drantz Appreciation Day, you can interact with the show on the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. We're going to be joined by Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine coming up in a few moments to talk about the Canucks goaltending situation, among other things. We discussed Artur Shelov's and Yuri Patera and how they might manage that situation earlier in the show, Drantzer, and I'm interested to get Woodley's take on Patera in particular and on what things might look like in terms of the season coming up for Artur Shelov's and the way they manage his game, both at the AHL and the NHL level.
Yeah, no one better to talk goalies with in the summer months, right? Because he's always dialed. And he's got, you know, good takes. I mean, he picked out Patera as a potential Canucks target that was worth watching, just given the stylistic similarities between how Patera plays and what we've seen Ian Clarke go for in terms of what he's looking for with his goalies, right? Like, there's a very specific list of traits that sort of makes one a Ian Clarke style goaltender, and, you know, Patera hits them. So I'm curious to know exactly what it is about Patera's game that stands out to Woodley as being a fit for the Canucks goalie coach.
And we are joined now by Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine. He is a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. Kevin, thanks for joining us. It is Thomas Drantz Appreciation Day here on Canucks Talk today because it is Drantzer's final show for the season before the summer. So the rule is you have to say something nice about Drantzer when you come on the show. So I leave the floor to you.
I'm just pissed he gets the summers off.
How dare you, Kevin?
Well, it just means I'm going to miss you, Thomas.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm going to miss you too, bud. But we'll be back at it soon. And then you'll be sick of me again.
There's my Thomas Drantz appreciation. I never get sick of Thomas.
Thanks, buddy. Hey, so let's talk Canucks goaltending. Clubs in a holding pattern in contract talks with Artur's Shelov's or Shelov's with Patera sort of incoming. Do you think there's any question about which Canucks goaltender will or should be the number two? Like, is there any question in your mind about how the Canucks will or should sort of approach this going into next season?
I think the intention and the plan all along is to run Demko and Shelov's as 1-2. And I put it this way the other day, like, obviously things can change in camp. Although really for a goaltender, when you think of the number one goalie probably taking the last couple of starts at home in a preseason to make sure he's ready to go, probably taking three starts, even if they only play 2.5 games. That means the other guys are getting the early stuff, probably on the road, not behind an eight. Like, it's really tough to really prove that, like, jump out and, like, post, like, three shutouts and be like, oh my God, this guy, like, we can't keep him off the team. That's kind of tougher to do as a goaltender, I think, in an NHL preseason. And I really do feel like it's not so much like, oh, there's a job up for grabs and there's a battle and you could win the job, so much as Artur's would have to lose it, if that makes sense. Like, that's kind of how I look at it right now. And obviously, need to settle on a contract. I will say some of the stuff I've seen about that feels a little silly in terms of, like, listen, there's no arb rights. This is not going to be a big number, I don't feel like. And, you know, even, like, some of the talk about the potential for offer sheets and things like that. Like,
yeah, I can tell you the Canucks are not concerned about it at all.
Yeah, like, it's, I mean, there are still a lot of teams around the league that aren't convinced. like a lot of goalie coaches around the league that saw him in the American Hockey League this year and were like, we're admittedly surprised by the success he had when he did get the job in the NHL based on what they saw in the American League. So I don't think there's a long lineup of teams that's, you know, see the same upside, frankly, that the Vancouver Canucks do. So they're in the driver's seat here in terms of this contract. I don't expect it to be, you know, anything more than like around $1 million, maybe a little bit more than that would kind of be where I expected to slot in. And that makes him, you know, the perfect guy. I also think there are some things in Patera's game. Like, he is definitely not a project, because I don't think they felt they could have a project. They needed somebody that could step in if needed. But there are some elements in his game that they'd like to tighten up a little bit. And so that takes a little bit of time. We've seen it with goalies that come into this system in the past where, you know, even in the American League, they don't necessarily play a whole bunch at the beginning because they're busy putting in the work to sort of make those changes innate and natural and instinctive. And sometimes the best way to do that is through practice reps versus game reps. So that's kind of how I see that playing out. I also think one of the things I like about Patera is he's not necessarily in a position where he needs to command the crease on a night-to-night basis in the American League. Like, there's still room for Tolopilo to play and grow so that by this time next year or the year after, but ideally next year, he becomes your next Shelovs, that option in the minor leagues that's ready for a bigger role should opportunity strike.
So what does the year look like for Shelovs then in terms of games played and how many of those games are in the NHL and the AHL? Because, you know, we've talked in the past about the benefit of having Abbotsford down the road and a waiver-exempt goalie in this situation is that you can get him game time in both spots. And, you know, I wonder about, for example, looking back at what the Columbus Blue Jackets did with a guy like Jonas Korpisalo when Ian Clark was there, which is that for the first, 1, 2, 3 years of his NHL career, he was playing games both in the NHL and the AHL and getting to around 30 starts, maybe a little more than that in some seasons, combined between the two of them. Like, is that what we should expect for Archer Shelovs because they have the benefit of waiver exemption and the fact that the farm team is just down the highway?
Well, and we've also saw it with, you know, the other prime example is UC Saros. Nashville did it with him when Pekka-Rinne was the guy in Nashville. And so it's possible for sure. If you get into a window where the farm, you know Thatcher's starting on a Saturday, Abbotsford's at home and they've got a couple of games on a weekend and Arturs hasn't played in a while, but you've maybe got him penciled in to start on Wednesday, you can send him down there and get him a couple quick starts. This will depend on workload. And the one thing about Jonas Korpisalo coming up with the Columbus Blue Jackets at the time is he was behind Sergei Bobrovsky, who was one of the true workhorses in the National Hockey League at that point. So I really do think that if your ideal world is Thatcher 50 to 55, there may be enough games for Arturs in there that you don't need to do that, or certainly don't need to do it regularly or often. But if for whatever reason Thatcher gets on a heater, they're in a maybe more of a battle than they would like to be for a playoff spot, and they start playing him more regularly or more than they ideally wanted to, and those stretches between starts get longer and longer for Arturs, that's where you look to use that to your advantage, the ability to get him down and get him minutes in the American Hockey League. I think the game has changed enough from that Korpisalo and UC Saros example in terms of what we expect the number one to play, that the number of games you need to do that, even if you see it as an option, I don't think it'll be as regular an option as it was at times for those two.
Well, and I guess to a certain extent with what's happened over the last couple of years, you know, you can't guarantee on Demko health either. And so the upside in terms of NHL games might be even higher than we're talking about if there are any lingering issues from the injury that Demko was dealing with in the playoffs, although I know Alvin said that they expect him back for training camp. They're not concerned about that. But you know, that's always a factor at any position with a team like the Canucks, that there could be more injuries than expected and more opportunity at the NHL level than expected as well.
Well, which is why you had to get a guy that you're comfortable could play games in the National Hockey League, which is why you saw Patera ahead of somebody who's maybe more of a full-year project like a Devin Cooley, which is what Calgary one of the reasons Calgary went and got him. Like, they see high upside, but they're not worried about maybe necessarily needing somebody who can play right now or win games in the NHL for them right now. And that's, you know, that's, that was part of that decision, a guy who they saw, they believed is comfortable in the National Hockey League already and probably would be comfortable, especially if Vancouver continues to have that underlying defensive profile that we saw this year. Like, that's the other part of this equation, right? Like, we've seen this team turn lesser-known third goaltenders into really good options. Like, I know it didn't end well for Spencer Martin here, but obviously he did have some success towards the end of that first season. The problem was, in his second season, they needed a goalie to stop bullets in his teeth and play Superman, and they don't need that anymore, right? So what you're asking these guys to do in these call-ups, in these situations, is certainly, I'm not saying it's easy, but it's a lot less than it was before. And so having a guy like Patera that's played enough games where, you know, you've seen enough that he's not overwhelmed by the moment or the spotlight or just the fact it's the NHL. And so, yeah, everything I talk about in terms of, you know, ideals and, you know, how much Seelovs is likely to play here versus Abbotsford, those are all based on everybody stays healthy. And as you said, and as we've seen, that's not necessarily the case. Well, I mean, the reality is for goaltenders around the National Hockey League, but, you know, certainly, you know, until you've done it, you haven't done it, and Thatcher still has to get through a season healthy as a number one.
Do you make anything of some of the murkiness? Like, obviously, Alvin was questioned about it and gave an answer, you know, discussed sort of the rehab, the summer training, the idea that a procedure wasn't required as of now, left a little wiggle room. I mean, do you make anything of sort of where we're at in terms of the conversation more than any actual facts around sort of Demko's rehab this summer?
Yeah, I think, like, I wouldn't overreact. You know, I've heard some talk about the fact he hasn't been on the ice. Well, last summer he was healthy. There was no procedure, and he didn't step on the ice for the first time till late July. And that's not outside the norm. As much as there are some guys who are on the ice already, it's kind of a very, like Carey Price for one, put the gear away, never even looked at it till August 1st, right? Because he wanted to sort of build that that desire back into his mindset, where so he's excited to put it back on. So the fact he wasn't on the ice till late July last year tells me I'm not worried about the fact he's not on the ice now. But certainly there seems to be, there's a lot of smoke. I can't tell you if there's a fire beyond people that would and should know reassuring me that he will be ready for the start of the season, much like Patrick Alvin did there. You know, but that little wiggle he left there, certainly, you know, makes you wonder about whether there is a fire behind that smoke. I think either way, I do believe the people that are telling me he's going to be ready for the start of the season. So whether that involves a procedure or not, I genuinely don't know, Thomas. But, you know, we saw a couple of years ago, like the one thing I would say is when he had the surgery on the other knee a couple of years ago, and then we saw that bleed into and ultimately lead to a compensation pattern in his movement that created and directly led to the groin injury the following season, even if there is one, and I, like I said, genuinely don't know, have pretty good sources, still can't get anyone to tell me whether that's something that's required. I don't think you're looking at it being something that leads to the same problems the last one did, because I think there's better processes in place, not just within the team, in terms of medically and the follow-up, than there was the last time, but also from his team and his expanded team that he's now got involved, helping him get and stay healthy in a different manner than he was at that time.
With Patera, is there any, how would you assess his like being claimed on waiver risk, assuming that a Seelovs contract gets done before camp and that he does quote-unquote win the battle, although I think your point is well made that, you know, how much will it actually be a battle?
Well, I mean, and if it's not going to be a battle and if you have any fear of there being a risk, can you do it early, right? Like, I remember the year where everybody panicked because the Leafs lost two guys on waivers, but they had nobody to blame but themselves because they waited till the end of the preseason.
Yep.
They gave other teams a chance to accumulate injuries in goal, which made their guys desirable. If they put them down early before the injuries occurred, they would have been in the American League free and clear. So there's always, like, there, you always have flexibility. If you make that move early, I think the risk is pretty low. I think the risk is pretty low anyways. When you look at the number of guys that are going to end up on waivers, you know, that ended up on waivers last year that are in a similar spot this year, like James Reimer is probably going to end up on waivers this year, right? Like Buffalo mm-hmm. signed him to a one-way contract, but unless there's a holdout by UPL, Devin Levi, like his adjusted numbers by the end of the season were top 20 in the National Hockey League. Again, a lot of people can't see it because it's Buffalo, but his adjusted numbers were just fine. He's ready for the National League. He's not going to the American League. And so you have a guy with Reimer's experience on a $1 million contract. He'll be on waivers. I think there's a long list of guys that a lot of teams, especially because the raw numbers for Patera don't jump out, the adjusted numbers are more flattering. You know, he's like plus 0.3% over his appearances in the NHL so far. He got some tough starts in there, but he handled himself fine. But when the raw numbers don't jump off the page, as much as it's silly to say that, the reality is a lot of NHL teams don't have access to the other stuff. It's disturbing, frankly, at times. But I don't see him as a guy that there'd be a bunch of guys ahead of him on that waiver claim pecking order. So unless they were to wait to the last possible day and a bunch of teams had injuries and there was nobody else on waivers, I think you're safe getting him to the American League.
Kevin Woodley of NHL.com and In Goal Magazine with us here on Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. I want to get your thoughts on the changes to the Canucks roster and particularly the defensive group within the context of the environment that these goaltenders are going to have to play in. So, like, we've talked a lot about they might need more puck-moving ability on the back end. You know, they lose right. Zadorov. You know, they bring in Desharnais and Forbert, who are both big guys who, you know, they think will show better than maybe they have to this point, or at least in Forbert's case, penalty-killing upside Desharnais. They're betting on improvement. How do you think that impacts the environment within the context of Rick Tocchet's system, within the context of the personnel changes for whichever goaltender goes into the Canucks crease next season on a nightly basis?
Well, I do hear the concerns about, you know, puck moving from the back end. I mean, we talk about guys who are on the ice right now shooting on goaltenders. There's one named Justin Schultz that's shooting on some goalies I know up in Kelowna right now that, you know, is a name I wondered whether it might not, you know, would it be even a better option than what the way they went on the right side of that third pair? Obviously, they see upside in Desharnais. Obviously, they've maintained the size in their second and third pairings. Mm-hmm. And I think more importantly, in the case of Forbert, somebody who's willing to eat pucks. And when we heard, like, it becomes a cliche, but you heard Jake DeBrusk, you know, identify that as one of the things that jumps out to him about Forbert. And I think that was important when he lost Cole, because we saw what this penalty kill looked like when they didn't have that. And I believe, and I remember talking to Rick talking about this, you know, in some one-on-one stuff for NHL.com last summer, like the importance of having that guy, not just because you need your defenseman to be smart enough and experienced enough on the penalty kill to know what lane they're supposed to be in, and that was a major problem before, but when they get there, they got to be willing to eat a puck. They got to be willing to block a shot. And there were too many guys here for the previous couple of seasons that just weren't. Right? Like, good for Oliver Ekman-Larsson. He's a Stanley Cup champion. And he got a really nice ticket out of Toronto. But playing in a role he's well-suited for, having him on the penalty kill, asking him to get in lanes and eat pot, like, that's just not, that was never going to be him. And having enough of those guys is important. So losing Cole and losing his willingness to do that and the contagious effect that Tocchet talked about it having on others, like when you see a guy doing that, other defensemen will do more of it, even for some of the ones where it's not in their natural DNA. I think that matters to the PK and to that defensive environment, preventing the cross-ice stuff. So, you know, there are questions about, do they have the puck moving ability to get it out of their end, or will they end up defending more? And those are fair. But in terms of how they defend, I think they maintained enough of that sort of identity that the environment, as long as forwards continue to buy in, and that includes not just coming back and how you come back to the neutral zone and how you get back into your own end and go to the right places and do the right things, but continuing to not try and force plays at the other end and turn into odd man rushes. Like, I don't see why that environment should change unless guys stop doing what they're asked to do and have been asked to do under Rick Tocchet. I think the personnel should allow them to defend in a similar manner. The only question is, do they end up defending more than they would like if they can't get it out?
Kevin, thanks for this. We appreciate it. And thanks for being a part of Thomas Drantz Appreciation Day.
Thomas, enjoy your holidays.
Thanks, buddy.
I'm just a little bit jealous, although I'm eager to talk more with Batch. I see you, like, as soon as he comes on and co-hosts, you're out. Batch, anytime you need me, buddy.
Perfect. We'll call you next week. Sounds good.
Take care, guys.
Thanks, Woody.
There you go. That's Kevin Woodley on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George in White Rock or whiterockhyundai.com. Plenty more reaction coming in on this Thomas Drantz Appreciation Day. There is also a trade that's being reported that happened while we were talking to Kevin. The Edmonton Oilers, according to Elliot Friedman, have traded Ryan McLeod to the Buffalo Sabres. So moving off a depth forward, maybe to create some cap space after some of the guys they brought in further up their lineup. I believe Matthew Savoie, I believe how you say it, in return. Yep. Ty Tullio also going to the Sabres, according to Friedge.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, look, McLeod, I like McLeod a fair bit, but, you know, I can understand why that may not have been a fit from a Edmonton perspective, given that, you know, I think they're in a stage where they probably need something a little more conventional in that spot in the lineup, where, you know, effectively you want a guy who, when you think of a third line center on a championship team, right, you're kind of thinking about players that are winning
guys
draws.
That, I was going to say guys that would be top four quality on, or top two line quality, top two center quality on half the teams in the league, probably, like the bottom half of teams in the league.
I think he could be, man. I think he could be a low-end second line guy.
Could he be a middle-of-the-pack second line guy, though?
Probably not, but I think he could be a low-end second-line guy, though, and that's a good third-line center. You know, like, I don't know that... Like, Anton Lundell, who the Florida Panthers just signed, I mean, I think that guy's... I don't think there's a huge gap in quality, to be totally honest. It's just that Lundell's skill set, finishing ability, where McLeod can kind of struggle, he's a little bit more defensively reliable, but McLeod moves the puck so well that he actually achieves good defensive results, too. He just does it in an unconventional way. Yeah, I don't know if I love that, although Savoie's really interesting and really young, right? Like, Savoie's 20, was a recent top 10 pick, right? And, you know, like, had a successful, I mean, he played an NHL game last year, was almost point per game in the AHL, and then crushed it, like 24 points in 19 playoff games in the WHL playoffs. Was basically one of the best players in the dub, period. So the Oilers are sort of trying to reset the clock, even $2.3 million versus what Savoie could be if he's able to break their team on an ELC. You know, that gap even matters for them too, and I think they probably are just looking at McLeod as a flawed piece, not consistent with what they want from bottom six players as sort of a winning team. I think it makes them slower, though. Like, you lose Fogle and you lose McLeod, and I don't think you're as fleet of foot.
Holloway is still pretty quick down there.
Yeah, but he has to be signed, and that's also part of it. You need the space to sign Holloway and Broberg. Holloway's speed is crucial, but I liked the way that, like, McLeod, Fogle, Holloway gave them, you know, the ability to have speedier looks depending on the composition of their lines. I think they might miss McLeod more than people realize. I think he's better than people realize. He was, like, the type of third-line center you could plug into your third line, and, yeah, they'd get outscored, but not by much. And I know that sounds, like, meaningless, but when you've got Connor McDavid driving the sort of goal differential that he's driving, just a third line that doesn't give too much back was hugely valuable, and McLeod's been a key part of Edmonton having that sort of balance of power emerging over the last couple of years.
We've got one more segment in Canucks Talk for the season, the final show of the year, Drantzer's final show of the year, so it is Thomas Drantz Appreciation Day.
Final segment of the year.
We are going to try and do
a lightning round
of Thomas Drantz Appreciation, if you're even capable of doing that, which I'm unsure.
Maybe we limit me to like 10 words per answer.
I'll put a timer and buzz you
and
when you're done.
Ding!
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect. Let's go.
Perfect. All right, more coming up. Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650 in a moment.
Hey, it's Mike Halford.
And Jason Brough.
Join us for Halford and Brough in the Morning weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. on Sportsnet 650.
Or on demand anytime through your favorite podcast app.
It's the final segment of Canucks Talk for the season. Brendan Batchelor in for Jamie Dodd, alongside Canucks insider Thomas Drantz on Thomas Drantz Appreciation Day. So if you're
it's
just
a real holiday.
Us, it is. We've created it July 5th every year from now on.
I hope you got gift cards and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What would be appropriate Canada Day, July 1, Independence Day, July 4th.
Thomas Drantz Appreciation Day, July 5th. So what's an appropriate Thomas Drantz Appreciation Day gift then?
A $25 free bet to play now.
That's pretty spot on, yeah, for sure. Okay, so if you're just joining us...
And then don't use it on hockey.
You're not allowed to use it on hockey. Yeah. That's the caveat. That's true. So Drantzer's summer holidays begin after today. By the way, big plans for your summer?
Well, I was supposed to go to the Mariners game this weekend to watch the Blue Jays play. I'm not going to regret this as much as I might because the Blue Jays have been, you know, crushing my soul. but yeah, I can't move well enough to go to a baseball game right now, to be totally honest with you, which sucks. I'm going to keep working at the Athletic. Usually I'd take like immediately a month off, basically, once I'm done with the show with both of my employers. But this year, I'm going to wait and try and like heal up a little more for another month. And like once I can reliably like go to the beach or go for a hike or
then take your time
probably
off.
Probably not
then.
A hike, but go for a walk at least. Then I'll take a bunch of time off. So hopefully August, I'm good enough to go.
And by the way, mentioning that you're going to continue to do work at the Athletic for the next little bit, you have a mailbag going right now, don't you?
So I do.
You sent us questions in, and we don't have the time to get to them in this final
segment.
The
Athletic.
Send them to the Athletic, and Drantzer will hopefully answer them in his mailbag piece.
I've also got my big Canucks, where are they better, where are they worse piece. That big column will drop Monday. And then, I don't know, I'll find ways to stay entertained. I don't usually work in July, so it's a whole new thing for me. Usually by August, it's like turning the page into hyping up the season
and training camp battles.
And I'm not even there yet, so we'll see where we land.
Okay, so the rule on today's show, send your questions in. If we have time, we'll get to them, but you have to say something nice about Drantzer first on Thomas Drantz Appreciation Day. We're going to do the lightning round, so here's how it's going to work. Drantzer, I am going to start a 1 minute timer after asking each question, and I'm going to buzz you at the end of 1 minute. So you've got one minute for each question. Iron Blair writes in and says, "Hey guys, I always love listening to Drantz. You're bang on, bud. Do you think we should have signed Zadorov instead of Hronek?" And I'm also going to mention that we talked extensively about Zadorov on yesterday's show, so you can go back and listen to the podcast of that for more context on this Zadorov situation.
So I do think the question is, should they have signed him? No, I don't know that...
Instead of Hronek.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think Hronek was the right player to prioritize because he contributes to the top of the lineup where the Canucks outscored their opponents by like 38. And that was like the most important thing to be protective about, especially because maintaining it is going to be extremely hard, right? We know that the Canucks improved as the season went along, but that shouldn't obscure the fact that the Canucks also... we're very fortunate in those minutes. It's going to be hard to be as good, but bringing Hronek Hughes back as an elite top pair gives them the best chance.
Well, you came in under the wire. You still had 10 seconds left. Ryan, the H2O distributor, I want Drantzer's opinion on something. That beautiful bald man, what are they thinking in Detroit?
Oh, I have no idea. I really can't tell you. The Steve Yzerman plan made sense to me up until last year's draft, where they really didn't like mine upside. They made sort of floor picks with all of the additional draft capital that they had from the Filip Hronek trade. If they'd gone into that draft and just taken home run cuts, so like Benson instead of Danielson, Sandin Palika's fine. They passed on Chris Dahl early in the second round. All of a sudden, I didn't understand. Like, I thought the play, and a play that I thought made a fair bit of sense given where that team was sort of positioned, if the play had been to effectively look to take Hronek, monetize him, and then do everything you could to try and make up for all your draft lottery losses by picking just a run of elite talent. That would have made sense to me. They do that. They sign, you know, Justin Hull, a bunch of big defenders in free agency. They kind of recreate that approach now, and it just doesn't feel like he's ceiling hunting with any discipline, so I have no idea.
There you go. Next, Amro the actor writes in, says, always appreciate Dranson, his homework. Feels like he does his best to give frank analysis on updates with the Canucks. Brock Besser is shown to be in the conversation as part of the core 40-goal campaign and X-factor in the Nashville series. Would the Marchessault contract be a comparable for a Besser extension?
No, I don't think so. Marchessault's older. And that sort of is partly why his cap hit is so low, is that you're signing a player through their age 39 season. Your expectation is that some of those later years are pretty dicey from a contract efficiency standpoint, but the extra term keeps his cap hit more manageable. You sort of have to look at it as like a 4-year deal that at like 6.5 that has an extra year onto the back end to bring the cap hit and restrain the cap hit. With Brock Besser, you're going to be doing, even if you're doing an 8-year deal, you're doing it through like the age of 35. You're really only looking at like 2 or 3 seasons that from an aging curve perspective look really dicey. I don't expect you to get a similar type of break. Put it this way, if Besser stays in Vancouver, he's not taking a pay cut. Especially if he, you know, even has 30 goals and maintains a top line role with quality defensive impact this season.
In Under the Wire again. Well done.
Yeah.
We need the timer to keep you in check here.
Let's go.
Jason in Ladner asks, which current restricted free agent, in spite of rumors or chatter, would you like the Canucks to snap up? He also says Drance's hits with Rick and Donnie are the best.
Give me a sec before you start the timer, just so that I can pull up the list. Think about it, and then I'll do it. But I just
who are some of the names off the top of your head that jump to mind when you look at current restricted free agents that either may or may not be heading to arbitration, and who they could look at in those sorts of scenarios? Probably not an offer sheet, I would assume. But maybe being able to acquire for a team that doesn't like whatever arbitration award there is, or something like that.
You can start the timer. I don't have my guy picked yet, but I'll come up with it. I'm going to start with defense. Like, I think really what you're looking for if you're the Canucks at this point is either a sort of second pair defenseman or a guy who could be a second pair defenseman among sort of the right-handed defenders. A couple guys who jump out off the page to me. One would be Logan Stanley, who continues to struggle to get ice time. He seems to fit the template of what Rick Tocchet and company are looking for. He's not a righty, which is sort of a downside here, but
would you call him a better puck mover than the guys they have right now?
I would call him roughly equal with Forbert. It's just a guy who makes sense, and the acquisition cost seems like it could be reasonable if the Jets aren't able to reach a decision there. On the sort of pricier end to acquire, obviously Braden Schneider has long been the apple of a lot of Canucks fans' eyes and would be a perfect, you know, hey, that's a guy who moves the puck well enough to play with Quinn Hughes, and now you can play Hronek and Soucy and have a better second pair. So I'd sort of shout out him as kind of a secondary one to watch here. I also love LA Kings right-handed defender Jordan Spence, but I don't expect him to shake loose. So I'd sort of start with Stanley among the acquirables on defense.
Ding, ding,
and
ding.
Move down to Schneider as a, you know, more aspirational target.
Let's continue here with the lightning round. Lots of questions. I've got to wade through them. Drance is wonderful. He calls it the way he sees it. Also, how else would I get my daily Dom's model update from Tyler? So, that will have to return next season, I guess. Drancer gives us an energetic presence, good perspective and color, some controversial takes, and his hairdo is shiny.
I want to shout out Tomasino as another one who I think Nashville would be open to moving. High upside, sort of like lottery ticket to maybe get one of those top six affordable, cost-controlled guys from a Canucks perspective.
Okay. Combo compliment and question for Drance from Morton North Van. I note in the divisive team flat brim versus team curved brim debate, you're a fellow flat brimmer, which speaks to your impeccable taste. Could you defend your preference in support of all of us out here on team flat brim?
It's mostly a practical decision on my end. I have a size 8 hat size. I have a massive noggin. I know you have a big head too, my friend. So
I do.
You and I together.
But I'm a curved brim guy now.
Fair enough.
I've evolved to like the dad hats.
I know. I've been trying. I've been dabbling because I also like them. But I'm still mostly a flat brim guy because I like to wear a fitted. The fact is that the trucker hat style, I have to have it on like the last or second to last rung, and I feel like it makes me look silly from the back. I'm mostly in flat brims out of practical necessity more than anything else. That's what happens when you have a melon.
Yes, I can I can attest to that for sure. Scott in South Surrey, Drance has the best hair in the game. Any interest in the team to go the offer sheet route? Broberg ? Put Edmonton in even more cap hell.
Nah, I mean, I don't think so. Like, what could you even do to put them in a position where they wouldn't match it? You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't feel like a realistic course of action that could actually land you the player, and you're more vulnerable, especially if you tie up your cap space to a potential Seelovs offer sheet than they would be anyway on Broberg. I don't think an offer sheet makes sense because I don't think players tend to actually move when you do the offer sheet. It really has to be a specific circumstance for a team position in a specific way, and the Canucks are not.
Chris from Vic, Drance, you rock. Listen to the show every day. Have a great holiday. Would a trade for Mackenzie Weegar help with the puck moving on the blue line?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Mackenzie Weegar is really good. Now, he's 30 and he's got a ton of term left on his deal. There's a right-handed defenseman that I love as a potential Canucks acquisition target, and it's not him playing in Calgary. It's Rasmus Anderson. Rasmus Anderson, 2 years, four and a bit. You know, maybe you pay a little extra on the acquisition cost to get them to retain. That, to me, is the a smoke and home run cut that the Canucks and a variety of other contenders should be swinging at over the course of the next 6 months, especially once Calgary is shown to be as bad as I really think they will be this upcoming season.
Unsigned. Thanks, Drance, for always providing us fans with such high quality content. Question, cap permitting, should the Canucks get Mitch Marner? And cap permitting, I think, is the most important part of that question.
Yeah, because to make it a realistic question, we have to go, should the Canucks trade $6 million out the door in salary to bring in Mitch Marner? So I think we're talking about like something like Garland, Podkolzin. Would you do Garland and Podkolzin for Mitch Marner? And my answer would be, yeah, of course. Well, I mean, what else do we have to pay? But yeah, I mean, that would be something that I would find interesting because I think Mitch Marner is a legitimately elite winger. I actually used to think he was talked about as like, you know, look, he's a top five winger in the sport, but I used to think that he was a little bit overrated when people would kind of go beyond that, just because he does some things in terms of managing the puck that drive me a little nuts, and that would drive Rick Tocchet a little nuts, by the way, in terms of turnovers at the blue line. But he's also a really good defender, a really sick playmaker. He's a pretty consistent 95-point guy. Like, let's make no mistake. 95 points is preposterous. And I love the fit in my mind's eye of what he'd look like with this Canucks core, added to this Canucks core, because he's also an elite, no doubt about it, one of the best in the league penalty killers. And I think that's one attribute that no one else in Vancouver's core has. So always this team is looking to bring in glue guys to help them out 4-on-5. If you could bring in another core piece roughly around the same age as Vancouver's other core guys who also had that in his bag, that to me just feels an awesome move. It would be awesome. Pettersson, Marner would be cannot miss television.
Yeah, absolutely. Sean in Campbell River, Drancer, we love your laugh. Would you look at signing Boakvist?
No, Boakvist will never play regular shifts for Adam Foote and Rick Tocchet. His defense is like really problematic, truly problematic, at a level where could they work with him and maybe improve it? Sure, but would he get enough ice time to make that gamble worth it? I don't think so. This doesn't feel like the right place for him as a developmental project. I much prefer the Justin Schultz tier of available puck movers on the market from a Canucks perspective. I just think Boakvist is, you know, I just think we'd bump into like the defensive version of Kuzmenko, where, yeah, he'd occasionally do some stuff that's sick, but also he wouldn't get enough opportunity to do it consistently enough to really reach his ceiling in Vancouver.
Austin and Langley, Drancer, have a good summer, bud. Love your takes and the show. Thanks for being the only host that supports my Joel Eriksson Ek to the Canucks shenanigans.
Yeah, I love Joel Eriksson Ek. He'd be a perfect fit behind Miller and Pettersson, but, you know, that's a pretty ambitious one. I think things would have to go pretty sideways on the Wild for them to consider something like that.
There was one here that is now dated because I can't find who it is here, so I think it's an unsigned text. Says, only you could have inspired that great intro song. Great body of work so far, Thomas. You do a fine job on player evaluation. Your time with the Panthers brings insight to the management side of the business. No one else on radio can see it the way you do. One question, and this is the dated part. Should the Canucks try and acquire Ryan McLeod? This text came in before that trade broke earlier.
Good instincts.
With McLeod going to the Sabres, but
I'm a big McLeod guy. So
like
yes.
A McLeod type then, shall we say?
Yeah, no, I mean, or from Buffalo, if things go sideways on Buffalo, like, yes, he's good. Bring him in. Big fan.
Yeah. How does his profile fit into Rick Tocchet's way of wanting to play?
Yeah, I don't think it'd be a perfect fit with how Rick Tocchet wants his centers to play, but I think if you moved him to the wing, his like speed, his relentlessness on the back check would make a lot more sense. I think as a center, probably not ideal fit for how Vancouver plays, but on the wings, he'd be like an immaculate fit. So I just think sometimes you go get good players who cost $2.3 million and are highly likely to provide surplus value over their cap it and then sort of figure it out. And in McLeod's case, I'd bet they'd move him to the wing. And, you know, I think he'd be an excellent fit as like a middle six winger for the Canucks.
KG and White Rock for Drance. I hate your stupid ankle for ruining the Seattle Blue Jays trip, but love hearing you break down the Canucks all season long.
Fair. Me too.
Where is the next one here? Drancer, unsigned text here. Love the boldness of calling things out that you think are wrong. Thoughts on Shillington for another defenseman add as a puck mover, I would imagine.
Yeah, I like Shillington a fair bit. I think Shillington's a really, really good player. He's also 6 foot tall. He's not that small. 185, 190 pounds. Not the most physical guy, but certainly versatile. Can play left and right. I love it. If he's your seventh defenseman, you know, a guy to provide an additional depth on the left side, what I really like about Shillington is I actually think he'd be potentially good enough to complement either Hughes or Hronek. So sort of like you bring him in as a seventh D, but really he's your third top pair D. You know, a guy who if Hronek or Hughes go down, at least you have a player capable of immediately filling in and giving you, you know, that same dynamic stylistically that you have with Hughes and Hronek. Obviously, he's not nearly that player, that level of player. But yeah, I mean, huge, huge fan of Shillington's game overall. I think he'd be a phenomenal fit with either DeHarnay or Forbert on the third pair in a pinch. And I do think he'd allow the club to buy top pair defense insurance, which I think they should have just because the way that Hughes and Hronek play together is so valuable to what this team does well. So Shillington would be the one guy on the open market. I mean, I'm a big Justin Schultz guy, but it didn't end well with Schultz the last time he was on a Rutherford team. So I'd be pretty surprised if that was a consideration for the Canucks. Shillington would sort of be the guy. You'd need to do your homework, make sure that you have sort of the apparatus in place to support him given some of what he's battled over the past two seasons. But if you could land him, I think that'd be a phenomenal fit.
We've only got time for a couple more here, but let's go to Spencer. Drance, love your musical theater kid references. Yeah, does Trevor fair. Van Riemsdyk and a pick make sense for the Canucks?
Yeah, big Trevor Van Riemsdyk fan. Awesome. He'd be a great fit provided that you the problem is he's not I don't think he's a three, right? Like, he's not a third defenseman. He's $3 million this year and next. I think realistically you want him eating soft minutes. I think that would help the Canucks, but I still think you have to aim higher if you're spending $3 million of your cap space on a defenseman. I think you want a guy who's like a genuine three, and ideally what you want is a guy who's a top pair defenseman. Like, if Van Riemsdyk's on the table today, but you could also wait and see if Rasmus Anderson shakes loose. Like, I'd rather pursue the higher end player from a Canucks
and be a little bit more patient. Yeah.
From a Canucks perspective at this point, like Shillington's probably a 1 year, you know, 800K deal. Like, that's different. That I would consider now. But I think you have to cross a higher barrier to be worth the Canucks spending the rest of their $3.5 million in cap space on, because their options, you know, come deadline season may be greater. And I think their needs on the back end are not another body who's like a slight upgrade or a marginal upgrade on what you're getting maybe from DeHarnay. Like, I think what you want is a top pair caliber defender who you are able to either plug into Hronek's spot with Hronek bumping down, or plug into the second pair who gives you like a real leg up in that spot.
Just a couple more here. Table Saw James, I like Drancer's Christmas poems, and I especially when he explains 10.2C NCAA free agent specifications for NHL teams to sign. And Wordsmith in Richmond says, I just love Thomas and especially his $5 words. I often have to look them up in the dictionary. And
fair enough.
Thomas Drantz Appreciation Day is almost done. So
thank goodness.
Summertime calls here. Great job on the lightning round. You kept it tight. I'm impressed.
Yeah, no, I can do that. It's just like mostly people want to chew scenery, right? No, is that not what we're here for?
Yeah, like, yeah, absolutely.
You know, and that, like, that's how I think about it. You know, I listen to a lot of podcasts myself, and you're there for the company, you know, and it's one way from the host's perspective, but very much so whether it's in the text inbox, whether it's the many nice messages I get, Twitter DMs or from folks on Twitter, or even the critical ones that let me know that people are listening, hate listening maybe. You know, that company is very much a two-way street. The relationship that we've been able to build with, you know, you, our loyal Canucks Talk listeners, over the course of a three-year run. 3 years in our business is nothing to sneeze at.
No kidding.
You know, it's been really special to me, and I know it's been really special to Jamie. So thank you guys, everybody who's listening, for following along with this team with us over the course of this year. It was a blast. It was an especially fun year, a year where we got to do different stuff than just sort of get upset about bad results and bad trades. There was more interesting meat on the bone this past season, and that made it all the more fun to share it with Canucks fans, especially because we could tell how excited you guys all were, not to listen to our podcast, but to just continue to follow and sort of dig another layer deeper into the success that this team was able to enjoy. And, you know, being a conduit to that, being in conversation with you guys, that's what it's all about, and can't wait to get back to it on the other side of the summer.
And from my perspective, it's been fun to be a guest on this show from time to time throughout the year, and to
be
here
a good sport
for the last few days. Well, you've got to be. What's the alternative? That's being true. A bad sport?
And you're either going to do the tears or you're going to cry tears.
Yes.
Those are your options.
And I know I said it was Thomas Drantz Appreciation Day, but I think at the end of the day here, this text just came into the Dunbar Lumber text line, and it's appropriate to finish the day off and finish the season off for Canucks Talk. Appropriately, an unsigned text that just says, hey, Drantz, you suck.
No, that's what I'm looking for. Thank goodness. We get to sign off with me being fully comfortable and back in my usual element.
So this has been Canucks Talk for the season. Thanks for listening. I'm going to be back next week in this time slot with Randeep Janda, so we'll continue the Canucks conversation and breaking down anything that happens with the team.
And I'll be back sometime in September.
Yeah, we'll see. It's going to be good.
We'll see. Thanks, Pat. Appreciate the vote of confidence.
Well, I meant we'll see when in September. Right. When, like we talked about, we don't know the details around training camp yet. You know, young stars, you know.
Young stars, we have the details.
That's true. But yeah. Are you going to be back doing Canucks Talk in time for young stars?
I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see. Exactly. There you go. This has been Canucks Talk. Brendan Batchelor in for Jamie Dodd, alongside Canucks insider Thomas Drantz, who covers the team for The Athletic. Keep it locked right here on Sportsnet 650.